Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for, was it, the 2nd of September?
I think it's a Tuesday.
2025. I know it's the 2nd of September because it is my birthday.
Oh, well, there you go, then.
As well as Keir Starmer's birthday. So,
ouch.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, someone's hogging all the limelight, you know, unfortunately. Thanks, Keir. But yeah, so happy birthday to me. I'm 46 years old. Not that you believe it, looking at my youthful face. No, I feel pretty good, actually, for 46. I don't really feel very different to when I was, like, in my 30s.
I don't mentally feel any different from when I was 17.
I don't even physically. Yeah, but, well, yeah, I agree. I feel, yeah. Mentally, I feel like I'm in my mid-20s. But, like, physically, I don't feel like I've, like, collapsed yet.
I was just me then.
I hear that's happening in your 50s, though, so I've got that to come. But anyway, we're joined by Nicholas DeSanto and Dan. And today we're going to be talking about the Leicestershireification of the Shires, which is what they want. And it's been all over everywhere today. Not the first time they said, oh, we need more diversity in the Shires. It's like, well, they've done some studies on diversity and they found out actually, ooh, it's not actually our strength, which we'll go through. We're going to talk about our impending IMF bailout.
Yes. we won't actually get one. They're just
won't we?
Well, they haven't got enough money.
Have we had one before?
Yes, 1976.
How did that go?
Not well.
And we're going to talk about how the two-tier society is basically all around us, aren't we? And,
absolutely.
There's simply no denying it at this point. There's no. I don't even see them trying to deny it this point, actually, because it's just so self-evident. Also, Graham Linen got arrested and banned from Twitter by the police. That happened a bit too soon for us to cover it on this podcast. Yeah. I'm sure they'll talk about it tomorrow because it's genuinely preposterous. So anyway, yeah. Welcome to Britain, folks. So, before we go on, of course, link in the description, go get your copy of Islander. It will not be on sale for much longer, and once it's gone, it is gone forever. You'll never get another copy. But anyway, so, we're constantly being told about the merits of diversity. Diversity is a strength. Diversity is good. Diversity will make the country better. It'll save the NHS. It'll save the pension scheme. It's for the economy. Whenever you see a brown person, just think GDP. That's what you should think. You see a woman with a hijab walking around with, like, you know, 5 children. That's raw GDP.
Walking into a council house.
Yeah.
Walking smell into the job GDP. Center.
And if only we had that, because sometimes they're a net drain, but that's another story.
Yeah. When you go into the NHS and every seat is full of people from somewhere else in the world, just think, wow, there's so much GDP in the waiting room here.
Sounds good.
I'm glad I've got to wait 6 hours to get my broken leg seen to. Because the GDP is everywhere and it's good for you. And the problem, though, is that there's not so much GDP in the countryside, actually. It turns out there's no GDP produced in England's countryside, in the Shires. This isn't good. Something needs to be done about it.
Not enough Turkish barbershops and vape shops.
Well, they are actually starting to get some of those now, actually. But there's not enough random people from Africa milling around, creating time in the centre of these towns, or Muslim women claiming benefits.
Well, yeah, but that's why I live there.
Well, yeah, I know, me too. But apparently we're getting diverse time.
Oh, good. Right? Oh, good.
So this is what you need to know. But anyway, right. Before we begin, go and watch Luca's series Chronicles. He's done another excellent episode about a play I've never heard of. So I'm going to watch this and find out what it's about. But I just want to show everyone the intro, right? Because I think we're kind of sleeping on just how much great work the team is doing. And I just want to play this scene.
Begin by talking.
Start at the beginning. So I was watching it before we started.
Hello and welcome.
Isn't that a beautiful intro? Anyway.
That's excellent.
I know.
Yeah. I'm going to see if I can get Brokenomics one of those.
Right.
Mesmerizing.
You don't have a lovely intro like that, do you?
No, I don't.
No, they've been working really hard.
It's just cut to Dan.
Yeah. So they've been working really hard, and we haven't shown anyone, basically, so I thought I'd show everyone. But anyway, so this is the article from The Telegraph that's going around that everyone's seen. The British countryside is overwhelmingly white. It's where the British are from, actually. And he needs more halal food, says a report from the University of Leicester. That their Centre for Hate Studies, I didn't realise that was an academic discipline. Might get a degree in hate studies. So I can be like, yeah, no, I'm going to be really racist to you. And I'm a professional. I am qualified to be racist.
Not sure that's what it teaches, but I don't know.
PhD in hate.
Well, yeah. I mean, if the BBC's disinformation reporters report nothing but disinformation.
Can we not be self-taught?
You can be an autodidact, but I want the qualification.
Right, okay.
I'm a credentialist.
Yes.
If you live in Leicester, probably you don't need to get a degree.
Well,
you have a street cred.
We are going to discover that shortly, actually.
Yeah, I've done my homework.
You have, yeah. So they complain that ethnic minority communities face challenges in the countryside because rural England is overwhelmingly white. And this creates feelings of discomfort and the psychological burden that comes with navigating predominantly white spaces. Which, I mean, don't we all just feel that? You know, Nicholas, when you arrived in this country, were you like, oh, too many English people?
Absolutely.
Something needs to be done about this. But yeah, so, you know, they raise concerns about traditional pub culture. Should probably just abolish it for the good of diversity. And how monocultural customs are exclusionary, which is remarkable. Because it comes from this report from their Centre for Hate Studies. And to University of Leicester, I would suggest, look not at the splint in our eye. How about worry about the plank in your own? Because, man, things are not good in Leicester. And to find out how bad things are in Leicester when it comes to hate crimes, we turn to the University of Leicester and their hate crime report. Now, Leicester, just for anyone who doesn't know, is 42% English. So it is a minority city. And it is the place where, you may recall, in 2022, there were race riots between Muslims and Hindus because there was a game of cricket, which was very important.
Yes, I remember that. And I remember the Labour front bench were mildly irked.
Yes.
And then a couple of months later, the British working class rioted and their basically eyes started burning.
Yes. I mean, cricket's serious stuff, and I'm sure that the only contention between these two communities was cricket alone. It certainly wasn't.
Yes.
It certainly wasn't indicative.
India and Pakistan get on very well apart from the cricket.
Exactly,
yes.
It wasn't indicative.
The occasional nuclear war in the afternoon.
But yes, there is that.
Exactly, no deeper concerns in that community. And you may also remember that Leicester East is the leading home of domestic and modern-day slavery in England, with 10,000 modern-day slaves under Claudia Webb's constituency.
Hang on, I've just spotted a flaw in your segment.
Oh, yes.
If Leicester is majority-minority...
Yes.
And that makes... And we've always been told that if you get rid of the white people, hate goes down.
That's correct.
Well,
how does this report exist?
Yes.
I don't know. Weirdly, slavery doesn't even come up in it, considering how many slaves they have in Leicester.
Yes.
Think they talk about that. I thought slavery was a bit hateful, but it doesn't even warrant a mention.
Oh, okay.
So let's go to the PDF. Now, Samson, I'll require you to skim to pages. But in the introduction, on page 7, they did this, and this was a two-year period in 2012-2014, they conducted this groundbreaking research. And they tell us this: the city of Leicester has an extraordinarily diverse population. It is home to substantial minority ethnic populations that are both newly arrived and well-established, as well as a wide range of faith, sexual, and other minority communities. And it is this rich diversity that made Leicester a highly appropriate site to explore experiences of hate, prejudice, and targeted hostility.
Hmm. I refer you to my earlier comments. There shouldn't be any.
Well, that's the point.
It's almost as if non-whites are also capable of hate.
But look at the framing. We were looking for the place with the most hate. We wanted to study hate. So we went to Leicester, our own backyard, where there's tons of hate because there's so much diversity. Hate is just a normal part of diversity, according to the University of Leicester. It's where you'd most expect to find it. What were we going to do? Go to some like nice village in the Wirral or something? You know? Like, no, we've got nowhere else to go. It's got to be there. And so on page 8, they tell us that during the process of conducting this study, we heard from sizable numbers of participants. So there was different, you know, people in the different lifestyles, whether they're Polish, Roma, Somalian, Congolese, Iranian communities, and all these other sorts of things. But you'll notice that the people they're leaving out from this are essentially straight,
white
men. You don't get to hear from those much. Although they do have white men in here, but they're ones with disabilities or mental health problems or something. So they get to be minoritized in the categorization. But the point is that you can see the assumption, the background assumption of all this, is hate is what happens from white men to minoritized communities.
Yes.
Someone who has been categorized. And so we go on to page 11. They tell us who took part in the study. So 56% were women, 42% were men, so that's a bit of a strange bias, isn't it? And 3% was transgender. Now, so that's some, not exactly a representative slice of Leicester, right? Unless Leicester has just a really disproportionate number of transgenders. Is 3% of Leicester really transgender? That would put there about...
That's what they used to call the don't know category, isn't it?
Yeah, that would make about something like 90,000 transgenders in Leicester or something, 9,000 or something. It'd be quite high. But so it's not really representative. And then they tell us that 29% of our participants were 18 to 24. The next largest group was 25 to 34, which was 18% of the sample. So more than half of their population is under 35 that they've sampled. But the thing is, only 25% of Leicester's population, if you check the 2021 census, is under 35. Actually, half of them, they're older, and the population generally, it's actually a fairly predictable...
Well, and also, if you say that Leicester is only 42% white, I bet on the under-24s,
yeah,
significantly more...
But they also 30% from the university itself. So this is not exactly a representative sample of the population. They say that they, if we carry on going down a little bit, you see a big table of the ethnicity. So 43% were white British, which is about roughly correct. 29% Asian, which is actually under. 13% as black, which is over. Then you've got mixed heritage, Middle Eastern, gypsies, etc., etc. In the 2021 census, they're only 8% black, 4% mixed, 41% white, and 43% Asian. So they are not exactly doing a balanced sample of this. But anyway, the majority of the participants called themselves heterosexual. 76%. Really? 25% of Leicester is gay? Is it, really? I'm not sure that they are. Again, I think this might be sampling biases from university population. But anyway, let's take these strange numbers that they have and go to the most recent racist experience that they had on page 19. So they tell us that for the majority of those surveyed, being the victim of targeted hostility was a current and ongoing issue. Well, I mean, that seems like a brilliant argument against it just on the face of it, right? Have diversity. Why? You'll be the victim of targeted hostility as a current and ongoing issue. Almost everyone, basically. 59% said that they'd been the victim of a hate crime within the last year, a quarter within the last month, and a similar proportion had experienced a hate crime more than a year ago, but less than 5 years ago. So most people are victims of hate crimes in Leicester.
Well, looks like they've gone in bad faith to start with, because the sample, it's a bit like BBC reporting, right? Yeah. You already want a certain outcome, yes. So you go and stick a microphone in the face of those people.
Yes.
You want to say what you expect them to say.
Yes.
And so the minorities in this sample were overblown. Mm. Age group, again, young people, yep, more likely to have been bombarded with all these mainstream or at school, you know, victimization, victimhood, oppression, white man bad, colonialism, yep, all that agenda. And despite the fact that they went in with in bad faith, what comes out is that in a diverse utopia, we have a lot of hate and discrimination.
That's true. You'd think that this wouldn't be the sort of thing they'd advertise quite as prominent, right? If you want everyone else to embrace diversity, maybe you shouldn't point out that that just means you're going to be the victim of hate crimes all the time.
Well, not only that, in the introduction, they listed through some of the things they're looking at, like broken windows, stolen cars. Yep. I mean, none of that happens around my way.
Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no hate incidents, is it?
In the little suburb I live in, I haven't seen a single hate incident. But what do I know?
Yes.
Anyway, so they if we go down to page 20, they tell us about the kind of abuse. Obviously, most of it is just verbal abuse. A lot of it is harassment. Only about 13% is property crime, 9% violent crime, 6% cyberbullying. So basically, it's people being mean to each other in the streets, which is like 80% nearly the abuse. It's just people just F off foreigner. But okay, well, that's nice. Again, what don't you want to live in an area where verbal abuse and harassment are just completely rife? This is what Leicester is advertising as being the strength of diversity and the consequence of diversity. This is what they want you to think of it. Because this is what they found in their studies. Incredible.
This isn't actually selling it to me, to be honest.
No, weirdly, isn't it? No. Right? It's weirdly not. If we go down to page 21, we find that race was the most commonly cited reason. There's a little graph here. There we go. You see race and ethnicity. So most people just don't like foreigners. Not racist, just don't like them. A lot of that's tied into dress and appearance. You can see there is the second largest graph, which again is tied specifically to race and ethnicity, because of course if you're wearing a hijab or something, people can identify you, and so, you know, this is directly connected. Again, I'm sure that in Leicester they're not racist, they just don't like them. 17% responded with religion as well, which of course is tied with race and ethnicity, especially if you're Muslim or Jewish. So yeah, it's quite bad. 14% with gender, only 11% for sexual orientation, so that's surprisingly progressive. But you can see that, I don't know, that it's not quite the utopia that people are pointing out. And if we go to page 22, we get a very interesting little paragraph where they tell us, within the overall sample of participants who felt they'd been victimized because of their race, substantial numbers of the respondents belonged to, quote, new and emerging communities, such as Black African, which included significant numbers of Congolese and Zimbabwean, as well as to communities with a more established presence, such as Indian, white British, and Chinese. It's good to know the white British have got an established presence in Leicester.
It was about time.
Yeah. That's
on a par with the Chinese.
Yeah, on a par with the Chinese, yes. So, I mean, like when it came to the number of people who have been victimized by their race, Black Africans, 86 accounts of being victimized based on their race, which I guess you'd expect. Indians, 61 accounts. White British, 38 accounts. And Chinese, 29 accounts. So people are more racist to the white British in Leicester than they are to the Chinese. Why don't you want to diversify the shires, guys? We're only going to bring a bunch of people who are going to be racist towards you because you're white British. And it's only going to be constant street harassment. I mean, it's really not a strong argument, is it?
No, it's not selling it to me, no.
So, I mean, you can tell that they didn't expect white British people to say, yeah, I've experienced racial harassment. You can tell. I read this whole thing twice. You can tell they were not expecting this. And in fact, we'll get to the... In fact, they say, quote, findings from the study challenge conventional ideas regarding which victim groups or identity and lifestyle characteristics should be relevant to hate crime policy. Oh, I bet they bloody do, right? If we go to page 29, they say... They point out basically that a lot of people are who are being aggressed upon are poor people, as you can see from the graph there. Sponges is what people are thinking. It's people who either receive benefits, do not receive an income, or earn £15,000 or less are the ones most likely to claim to be the victim of hate crime. Frankly, I think a lot of it is going to be people.
And that might also be just the people who spend their day wandering around the street as opposed to being in an office.
True, that's true. And it probably is also correlative with the groups that they've interviewed for these... survey. But if we go to page 31, I think it's remarkable where this is happening. Because again, this is just such another wonderful, wonderful example. If you can scroll down a little bit on this, you'll see a little graph. There we are. Where is this happening? Well, most of the time it's either in public, outside my home, or in the city centre. It's just happening in the streets.
Okay.
People in the streets just like, and if you look, public transport, around a place of entertainment, other public location, like near where I work, in a bar or a nightclub. It's just people in the streets racially abusing each other.
Where's in my place of work? Where's that?
That is about 7% there.
In or near where I work. Okay, because the view of racism always told, it was 50-year-old white men saying something mean in the office. That's what racism is supposed to be.
Yes, 10% of it's happening in the university itself. 10% of it is happening, quote, in my home. Thanks, Grandad. Like the multi-generational homes of old Muslim granddad abusing racially young grandchildren. I don't know. But the point is,
I don't know.
I'm talking about the Hindus who have just moved in next door.
You know what? I'm not here to judge.
Granddad calling you a mud shark or something. I don't know.
But the point being is that this isn't exactly selling it to me either. So the racial abuse goes to all races when you bring diversity into your area, and it just happens in the street all the time, to the point where most people experience it within the last year, but also like a quarter within like a month. So it's a really regular occurrence for people. So that's not exactly a great advertisement, I would say, for diversity. I mean, stop me if you think I'm wrong, of course.
No, absolutely.
If you can somehow see an upside to any of this.
No, I mean, diversity, again, remarkably, they went in trying to, most likely, because this is the university, we know these environments, they wanted to get what they already set out to get.
They assumed it was true.
Credit to them, they have still published that. But obviously, diversity creates tension because you have people from different cultures. And of course, the big fat lie that we've always been sold is that multiculturalism is fantastic as long as we believe in some core values. And this is already a paradox in itself, because if we come from different cultures, we don't have the same core values.
How could we have
this? We don't attach the same value to human life or women's rights or freedom of speech and
being polite in public.
Absolutely.
Well, it does look like in Leicester they do share a core value.
Well, yeah, being
racist to each other.
Yeah. Because that happens when people are different. And as long as we are doing economically great, which we are not, then it would be something different. But even when we are not doing that, again, in part due to too much diversity and multiculturalism, never mind net zero and other problems, war in Ukraine and all that. But because resources are also limited, these migrants are also hostile to each other. Mm. Because, first of all, they don't have this culture of tolerance or stiff upper lip or, you know, trying to put on a brave face and all that. It's a different culture. And secondly, they are also competing for limited resources. Not to mention, and I finish here, importing their own long-standing conflict. So you have Indians and Pakistanis in Leicester. You might have Turks and Kurds in Germany, and so on.
Yeah, well, we just hate each other.
We went to London the other week. We were there for 20 minutes before we saw two ethnics fighting each other.
Yeah, it was really bad. Yeah. It was really, really
bad. Because
these
are unresolved problems that we have imported.
Yeah, so let's move on to page 33. Let's see how do the people of Leicester cope with all of the rampant racism that they victimise themselves with? Well, if you go down a bit, there's another graph in here, I think. But okay, maybe I haven't got a graph, but you can see the quotes here. So there are certain times that we go out now, like Saturday evenings. We don't go out. No, it's dangerous for my kids. You can't walk at nighttime in my area. How can you trust the people on the street? All of them are a stranger for you, says a male asylum seeker from Pakistan. And he's saying, I can't walk around the street. Someone might get raped. Like, this is remarkable that they're like, yeah, this is just...
I wonder if that was the case in Pakistan.
Good question.
Well, presumably he's from somewhere.
Yeah, Chinese woman's like, we can't go out at night. The most dangerous part is just being around them, basically, each other, is what they say. So if we get down to page 37, page 30... Well, I thought I was on page 37. But anyway, right, so you can see that if you go to page 37, you can see that there's a graph on this page. We go down a bit, there we go. The dark green is people who are not affected by this. Yep. So 8% have said that this doesn't impact their quality of life.
Maybe they're the ones doing it all.
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. The 91% say that they have been affected in some way and negatively. So that's great. That's absolutely great. So if we go to page 39, we can see the consequences of what this has on people. And 71% say it's made me upset, 41% say it's made me anxious, 37% says it makes me angry towards others, 36% makes me vulnerable, 35% made me avoid certain areas, 33% made me fearful, 32% made me distrust other people, and 29% says makes me depressed. And that, again, is the overwhelming majority there. So, again, not another brilliant advertisement for diversity. Would you like to be upset, anxious, vulnerable, and depressed? Because if you do, import diversity, says the University of Leicester,
I mean,
based on the experience of the people of Leicester.
Look, the more I'm coming back to your original question is, no, I don't think I do want this for the countryside.
Yeah, weirdly, I think I don't want this in the Shires.
Yeah.
So when they come out and like, yeah, well, the Shires are too white, I say, are they, though?
Yes.
By your own metrics?
Compared to getting this.
Yeah.
Made me want to move house, conceal my identity. I mean,
well,
made me want to move away from Leicester. Why only 11%?
Yeah. I guess a lot of them feel trapped there. But let's go to page 52 now and discover what people are doing about all of these problems that diversity has laden on them. So the answers are they're self-segregating and imposing a personal curfew and they're arming themselves in their own homes.
Right.
Wow, what an amazing suggestion.
In response to diversity, they're undiversifying themselves into sectarian clans.
Yes, 61% avoid walking in certain areas and going to a certain place, 36% just don't go out at night, and 27% improved home security, as in they have weapons in the house. And then 15% carry personal security devices and whatnot. So, again, not exactly a brilliant advert for the diversification of the Shires, and I'm not really sure I'm for it.
But in some peculiar and concerning way, this is achieving the goal of 15-minute cities that the pro-green agenda are looking. Because isolate yourself, don't walk out, don't travel, just everybody's atomized and everybody's living in fear.
Split a city into four, could we? Like the white area, the black area, and the Asian area. Mind you, the Asian area will go to war with each other.
Like after the fall of the Roman Empire, right? Yeah. There's no state to guarantee your security, so you might as well fortify if you can afford.
We'll get to that, because for the interest of time, I want to rush on. So if we go to page 56, they give us a bit of a breakdown on what their actual perpetrator data looks like. So if we scroll down a bit on this, they say our survey data illustrates that hate crime perpetrators come from a range of different ethnic backgrounds. So just bringing in diversity is not actually just the answer. 3/5 of survey responses stated their last experience of hate crime would involve a white offender, 61%. 1 in 6 said their most recent experience was an Asian offender at 16%, and 12% was a black offender. The diversity amongst perpetrators becomes more striking when looking at specific strands of hate crime victimization. Taking racially motivated hate crime as an example, just under 2/3 said described the offender as white British at 58%. However, significant numbers of respondents said that Asian British, 17%, or black British, 15% individual had been involved in their most recent experience of targeted hostility. The interviews complemented the survey data in demonstrating that the perpetrators involved in racist and religiously motivated hate crime come from various different backgrounds. That was 42% not white British committing hate crimes based on race. So they're pretty racist. So do you want a bunch of racists who don't like each other, let alone you, moving to your shires? I can't say I'm in favor.
Racists are also more violent than the white, typical white racist.
That's true.
And don't bring too much GDP either.
Well, yeah, that's another great point, because as we saw, it was all the bottom rung of society. But if we go to page 57, they say, in these cases, though the majority of offenders involved in the most recent experiences were white British, over a quarter stated that an Asian, British, Indian, Pakistani, or Bangladeshi individual had been involved in their victimization. The findings from the study illustrate that the profile of hate crime perpetrators is much more diverse than commonly assumed. That's progress, folks. Diverse hate crimes is where we're aiming for. So if we go to page 70, there's quite a lot of discussion on the police in this, and they just say, what's the point?
Yes.
As you can see, police don't take it seriously, or I dealt with it myself, the police don't do anything, this was a private matter, the police would not have understood, blah blah blah. And so basically many people just don't bother going. A female Zimbabwean asylum seeker says, quote, there's not much they can do anyway because you'd never come across those people again. I would never recognize them. There's no way they could get them. It would be a waste of time on my side to report it to the police. As in, it's a random person walking around the streets who just racially abused me and then pissed off.
There was a time where if somebody was abusive in the street, you'd just say, well, yeah, but I know who you are. Exactly. I went to school with you. And
yeah.
They don't know each other. Like the Pakistani asylum seeker said, well, this is a place of strangers.
Yeah, that would be the high trust society where people know each other.
Mm. The Shire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the last bastion.
Yes. Anyway, so we can move on to page 80 for recommendations. Now, these are excellent recommendations, obviously. So the first one is frontline practitioners should treat victims with empathy, humanity, and kindness. Okay, I assumed that they were. I mean, I assumed they were being nice. But then the second one is organizations should consider early interventions before incidents escalate into violence.
Such as?
It's happening on the street. Yeah. It's not happening in the police, in the schools.
What do they do? Like sniper nests on the high street?
No idea, but it's just happening in the middle of the street, like all over the town. Like, don't know what their argument is here.
Yeah, there could be even further diversity and equity and tolerance courses at corporate level. Well, but they're already doing that to the max.
That's the next suggestion.
There you go.
Hate crime awareness campaigns should be publicized in more appropriate community relations. So you're going to have to try and propagandize the diversity not to be racist towards one another.
So what, so play a looped video in the benefit center?
I guess. Right. More propaganda. The next one is, of course, a lot of it happens on public transport, so it should be, quote, made safer for all. Armed guards? Like, what are we doing here?
They got rid of conductors on buses, like, 30 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people saying, oh, we need armed guards on trains in London. It's like, we never used to. Why has this happened? I remember 25 years ago, travelling on the tube in London as a, like, you know, 19-year-old kid, like an idiot, having no problems whatsoever. There was absolutely no danger whatsoever, as far as I could see. But anyway, here we go, you know. Number five is that the public should be encouraged to take appropriate action when witnessing hate crimes. It's like, what does that mean? Like, I'm not, I mean, who wants to take risks of their own personal safety for foreigners?
I mean, if I see two ethnics fighting,
I'm not getting involved.
Yeah.
Why would I?
I've seen posters on the London Tube and TfL is encouraging people, when you see sexual harassment, intervene. Say, that's not okay. Remember the maid campaign?
What, like the guy who got slashed across his nose in France?
Yeah, exactly.
Because the diversity was harassing.
Yes.
And then this American
that was really nasty as well. Bam, deep cut.
Yeah, huge. Cleaved his nose.
Yeah.
Here, the assumption is that it's the white people who are doing the racism.
Exactly.
So you're very welcome to intervene.
Exactly. But the data already shows, no, it's almost half of it's not. And then the next one is, of course, extra reporting mechanisms. So basically an increased surveillance state.
Somebody I don't know and won't recognize again said something mean.
Yes. And then have, you know, better reporting mechanisms and stuff like that. This is all like, you know, surveillance state nonsense, right, basically, for the next couple.
But none of those would work.
No. And then engage with different groups and communities. Don't know what more you could possibly do. Voluntary and tailored community services should be okay, but that's not going to prevent racism on the streets. And then non-punitive responses to hate offending should be pursued to challenge underlying prejudice. So it's an attempt to brainwash them, basically.
Right.
Look, we just need to explain to you, you're not allowed to say certain things to certain communities. So after all that, I mean, I think actually I'm just suggesting keep the countryside homogenous.
Yeah,
actually,
I'm leaning that way.
Yeah, I think we can avoid all of the problems, the hate, the racism, the lack of trust, the increase in crime, the fact that people are afraid to go out in the streets, they can't go out at night. I think actually if we just keep the areas a bit homogenous, we avoid all of those problems and we can ignore all of these recommendations and just keep our own.
If it ain't broken, just don't try to fix it. And yes, you might say I'm a dreamer, but how about retaking the urban areas as well? As someone who's living in the Sin City of London.
Incredible.
I just wanted to throw that in the middle.
Absolutely incredible. Okay, right. Let's get some super chats because there have been a bunch come in. David says the byproduct of socialism is systemic oppression. The engaged view says, damn, check out Carl in that suit looking so sharp he could cut himself smiling. Thank you very much. Mm. Mark says, came to rural Cornwall from Canada for 2 weeks in July. Not much strength, very little diversity, but it was beautiful and the weather was nice too. I bet you didn't even get racially abused on the street, did you? You know, you don't even know you're living. Jacob says, buy Islander magazine and send him pictures of you and a copy from around the world and happy birthday. Yes, there was a chap who climbed Ben Nevis and sent us some photos of it with Islander the other day. So yeah, see if anyone can get more exotic than that. Pezza says, somewhat off topic, but I correctly recall OG Sargon days, you did a series called All Cultures Are Equal. You should bring it back. I mean, it's probably a hate crime at this point, so I Carl, considering you're called Sargon, I'm not called Sargon, but anyway, would you or both think about doing videos on the Bronze Age? I hear the Hittites are pretty based. Yeah, the Hittites are pretty great, but maybe I'll bring it up with him. And thank you, Hayden. Happy birthday to you tomorrow as well. Let's carry on.
Would you mind doing the links? There we go. There you go. Right, so I've been off for the last couple of weeks. No internet. Deepest Devon. Spending time with the family, always great. And I thought, well,
there a lot of GDP around.
Yeah, and well, no, there wasn't actually. No, there wasn't. It was remarkably undiverse. But the roundabouts were getting painted in the George Cross.
Very like based.
And normally when I'm on the podcast, of course, I'm here to keep Rachel Reeves in check. Criticize yes. her. But I thought I can go away for 2 weeks, can't I? I can do that. She can surely behave as no. I'll come back to this.
Did you make her cry the first time?
I hope I was a part of it. I can only hope. Britain is heading for an IMF bailout. Economists warn as Rachel Reeves drags us back to the 1970s. So Yes.
One thing that made my father conservative for his entire life
right.
was the state of the country in the 1970s. Because he was a young man.
Mm.
And he remembers the rolling blackouts, the 3-day work weeks, the rubbish piling up in the streets, the...
bodies not getting collected, all that sort of
thing. Bodies not getting collected, the general economic stagnation, the tyranny of the unions, the fact that the country was just literally falling apart.
I mean, that is a normal day in, like, Birmingham or Leicester these days.
Sure, but he was from the southwest. So.
Right, yes, it shouldn't happen like that.
Exactly. It was where otherwise should have been lovely.
Mm.
So he remembers the problems. And once again, we're back here.
I mean, to be fair, the Tories were awful as well.
Yes.
But the difference with the Tories is, even though they were, you know, very biddable for all the globalist left-wing ideas, they weren't ideologically malicious.
Yes
they were incompetent,
yes.
but not ideologically malicious.
I think a lot of it is weakness as well. They knew what ought to have been done.
Yes.
It was just like, oh, I don't think it'll be me, though.
It's an easier life just to you know, carry on paying out.
Correct.
You
know, so into conditioned into not wanting to be called racist or bigoted.
Go along with all the globalist ideas, the green agenda, all that kind of stuff.
Or even doing anything useful.
Whereas Labour is doing all of that, plus a whole bunch of other ideological stuff as well, and it's just too much.
It's amazing.
Pushed us over the edge. So some interesting quotes from this article, and I basically picked out the two most left-leaning characters I could find within it. Andrew Sentence is a former member of the Bank of England's rate-setting monetary policy committee. He's quite a left-wing chap.
I imagine he's pretty tightly involved in that sort of stuff.
Well, even he said... Rachel Reeves is on course to deliver a Healey 1976-style crisis later this year or early next.
I mean, I just can't believe we're going to need an IMF bailout.
Yes.
Well, that's embarrassing.
I will come to that. Because,
Yes,
because whether they got the money or not. Professor Jagjit Chahad, I might be pronouncing that wrong,
yeah.
Head of the National Institute for Economic and Social Research think tank. So, again, a left-wing organisation, a left-wing think tank. He says, we will not be able to roll over our debt. We will not be able to pay pensions or benefits. Yes.
I mean, I kind of hate paying benefits.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, there are aspects of that I like, to be fair. But if they get to that point, they're probably going to take everything that we have.
To pay the benefits.
Yes.
Yeah, but on the plus side, it's not going to last very long.
No. No, I don't think even our savings compared to the national debt are going to...
No.
Might get you like a fraction of a second.
It's going to be... I mean, literally, it would be like, you know, oh, this is like 5 minutes of NHS spending or something.
Yes.
You know, it's like we've looted every saving...
5 minutes of NHS spending?
Yeah.
You could get a battleship for that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know, it's going to literally be like, right, we've funded the NHS for another 27 minutes.
Yes.
So, okay, great, you've looted the country. Now yes. what?
Now everything's gone. You
know, tick tock, tick tock.
Not just the Daily Mail. Samsung could have some buttons at work.
I can fix it.
There we go. Telegraph have also been getting in on this. So, yeah, Rachel Reeves heading towards an IMF bailout. Yes, very unfortunate.
Sorry, what's this graph here?
This is...
Borrowing
costs. Oh, yes, I'll be coming back to that as
well. Oh, okay, yeah, right.
Yes, that is a good one because, of course, he's got all the same sort of quotes in there as well. And it's not just that. Let's see if the button works. Here we go. So, here we go. This is France. So, in the UK...
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but I just love it. It's like, yeah, so
it's quite funny.
You
it's
think
quite
about here? Well, France is about to crash the global economy, so enjoy your pensions.
Yes. When the French heard that we were on the verge of an IMF bailout, they were like, well, hang on a minute.
We need that bailout.
We need it, yeah. And at least in the UK, they're making half-hearted... They're not trying very hard to deny it.
Yeah.
You know, they've had like one Treasury spokesman go and say, oh, you're exaggerating.
Do you think that Spain's going to put their hand up and be like, yeah,
quite, okay, yes.
Next? And the Italians will be like, well...
I mean, this is a French finance minister, Eric Lombard. No, he's saying, no, actually, we're going to need it. So, yes.
Amazing. Just
so coming to your point, so are we going to get a bailout from the IMF? The reason I slightly hesitate on that is, okay, yes, we're going to need one because Labour are running out of money. and everything they're doing is making things worse. Really? But first, if Britain and France need a bailout from the IMF, we need to ask the question, who's actually funding the IMF?
I was going to ask that. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, where do they get their money?
So there's basically six big countries and then a tail of smaller contributions.
Is Britain one of the major contributors?
Well, let me go down the list. who are the big boys in the IMF?
It's going to be America.
United States, yes, they're first. 16.5% of the voting share. Tiny problem, their debt to GDP ratio is higher than ours.
Yeah. But I mean, they're America, so they've got this kind of special carve out when it comes to financial affairs.
To an extent, yes.
No one's going to expect.
They have got $33 trillion in debt, so.
It's kind of like a fictional thing at this point.
Next in the list is Japan.
Oh, really?
But they've got an even higher debt to GDP than we have. They've got 260%.
Okay.
I mean, we're a bit over 100.
Right. That sounds bad.
So Japan at 260%. I mean, right. they've most certainly have their own problems.
Right.
China.
Oh yeah.
China. They make a relatively small contribution, but it ends up being, you know, one of the top six for this. They actually only have debt to GDP of 84%.
Oh.
Yes. And I'm sure the Chinese would just be, you know, desperate to help, the British. We've got a long history of cooperation. You know, we haven't burnt down several of their major cities for at least 100 years at this point, so.
Oh, I mean, completely no strings attached, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure they won't want anything for it. Things are looking up. Now, Germany. Germany is the fourth biggest contributor to it, and their debt to GDP ratio is only 65%. So they're actually the only people on the list that are in a position to actually do anything. The only problem is that German banks hold a hell of a lot of debt from British banks, but especially French banks. So if the French system failed, the German banks would need a bailout. And that would mean that Germany wasn't then in a position to help France and the UK.
And if the British ones fail at the same time,
yes.
So they have to bail out. Yes,
that is a bit of a problem.
Twice.
Quite.
Right.
And the last two countries on the list that could help France and the United Kingdom if they get into problems are France and the United Kingdom.
I know it.
So, yes.
Incredible. First world countries, folks.
Yes. Needing an IMF bailout and getting one is a slightly different proposition.
I mean, it's so embarrassing. It's like, yes. You know, they're constantly like, oh, Britain's going to be a world leader in this, it's going to be a world leader in that. It's like, bro, we're getting like third world style bailouts from the IMF.
Yes.
And there's like mass unrest everywhere. Everyone's poor and everyone's fleeing the country. What are you talking about? You've screwed this up.
But the thing is, I could fix all of it. If I was made Supreme Patriarch of the UK tomorrow, I could fix all of this in a year.
Right, Lord Protector Dan, how would you fix it?
Just getting rid of a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, shrink the benefits, yep. Start capping off the pensions, the NHS,
rein that in. Yeah.
You know, no welfare for the immigrants. I mean, it's perfectly easy to do.
Yeah, I figured it would be.
The thing that's impossible to do is to get elected on a platform doing any of that stuff. Mm. Any of it.
So that's why Elon Musk fell off with Donald Trump, because even Donald Trump was not brave enough to go after cutting the expenditure, that the so-called the entitlements, as they call it in the US.
Yes.
So nobody wants to touch that, even the Republicans.
Yes, I mean, there's often this idea that, you know, you've heard of some silly, crazy scheme that you can cut. I mean, in the Western world, it's all transfer payments. So in the UK, it is the NHS, its pensions and its welfare. You know, and also the UK state like has the odd battleship and submarine and building and buy some paper clips. But I mean, all of that other stuff is immaterial. It's the big three.
Yeah.
It's NHS, pensions and welfare. It's transfer payments. And of those, the NHS and pensions, I mean, obviously, they're basically just a subsidy of old people.
Mm, of course.
Which were introduced at a time when old people were poor. But now one in five British boomers is a millionaire.
Yeah. The old people are actually doing quite well.
Yes, and welfare, of course. Yep. And you're not fixing the system unless you address those three.
Yeah. Sort of like Greatest Generation and Silent Generation probably were poor and probably did need.
Oh, they were, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is actually that is kind of how we got into, honestly, how we got into this problem was age demographics. So the Greatest Generation went on, fought a war, and for whatever reason, fighting a war gets you a bit frisky. So they had lots and lots of children. And then the boomers in the 80s, they were kind of looking at their parents' generation. Yeah. And they thought, and what they realized was that being old and being poor was basically the same thing. So if you wanted a program to help poor people, you just targeted old people because it served exactly the same function. Helping old people and helping poor people was the same. So they bolstered out the NHS. They brought in a whole load of extra benefits for the pension, and you know, eventually that ends up in the triple lock or the quadruple lock or whatever it is you're going to end up with. And it's very easy to do in the 80s because there was lots of boomers working and very few retired people, and the retired people didn't tend to live very long after they retired. The problem is when those boomers then start to get to this point where they're all rolling out of the workforce, well, there isn't a commensurately large generation propping up behind them.
And this is the real problem. The boomers shrunk the generations that come after them.
Yes.
Every generation after the boomers has been smaller.
Yes.
So when the boomers, a massive generation, retire, we can't afford to pay for them.
Well, it used to be something like 4 working age people for every retired person.
Yes.
And now it's about balanced.
But the boomers only wanted 2 kids.
Yes.
Way easier.
Well, and that, so that's the first problem. That then leads us on to the second problem. And the second problem is, well, if the boomers didn't have enough kids, well, why don't we just import loads and loads of people?
The only option.
You see, Bob, who grew up in Surrey, and has been acclimatized to this country and knows how it works and is culturally compatible.
Is of the country.
Yeah, is exactly comparable to...
His granddad?
No. What's a typical name in Bamalia?
Abdul?
Yes, Abdul. He's exactly interchangeable with Abdul. And that is genuinely how our number crunchers in this country work.
Yes.
They say, okay, well, look, the economy is that big and it's got that many people in it. So we know what the GDP per capita is.
Yes.
So if we increase the number of people, then the GDP per capita will stay exactly the same because Abdul from Bamalia is exactly interchangeable with Bob. And then the GDP will grow.
They're 2 steps ahead.
Yes. Yeah. Brilliant plan. The only problem is that it didn't work.
Oh.
Yes.
Is it something to do with remittances?
Well, no, it turns out that Admiral Fatma from Bamalia, when they turned up, they didn't actually get an accounting job.
Ooh.
They just kind of went on benefits.
He also brought 4 grandmas who all needed benefits.
Well, yes. So all the bills went up. But no, the GDP didn't arrive as well. So the boomer problem led to the immigration problem, and none of those have actually stuck. I mean, there's been other things. I might do a Brokenomics on this to sort of fully flesh this out, or maybe I'll do that this week. But the response to 2008 was disastrous as well. So after 2008, they thought, well, so the banks, they've had a problem, have they? Tell you what, from now on, banks are only going to lend to the government and on housing debt. So that's why houses continue to surge and they keep getting more expensive, but no new businesses are open.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that loaning money to businesses was a good and clever idea.
Yes, so basically when banks create loans, they create money.
Yes.
So if you're doing that and you're putting it into a small business, which in turn in future generates more money, that's a multiplier effect. And that's good money creation.
I would suggest that's actually how a real economy is created, right?
Well, yes, that is how both America and China became superpowers, by doing that exact thing.
Because if you're just pouring it into fixed equity,
yes,
like a house,
yes,
I mean, that doesn't actually generate money.
But if after 2008, if you take all of the loan, the money creation out of the economy and put it purely in the government and housing, what you get is a boom in government and housing.
No kidding.
Yes. Yeah, so there is that.
Shame we didn't get that boom in business, isn't it?
Yes, it is a little bit unfortunate. It's worth drawing the comparison, of course, with Miss Truss.
Yes.
Because do you remember Miss Truss?
Vaguely?
Yes.
Every time I look at my mortgage statement, I remember.
Well, you say that because she has sort of become a byword for financial incompetence.
Which seems a bit unfair given the Labour government.
Well, no, two things happened with Liz Truss, right? And they happened on pretty much the same day. She came out with a mini budget and said, I'm very slightly going to decrease the top rate of tax.
Crazy.
Okay, so that's one thing that happened.
Unheard of.
On the same day, the Bank of England also said, we are going to sell an absolute shit ton of bonds.
Really? Now, what does that mean when they do that?
Well, if you flood the market with anything, the price tends to go down.
I believe so, yeah.
Now, what happened that day is the price of bonds went down.
Hmm.
And the rest of the world looked at this and said, oh, look, the Bank of England has just dumped a shitload of bonds on the market. And also, Liz Truss has very, very slightly reduced the top rate of tax. Which one of these things have caused the price of the bonds to crash? Well, it's obviously Liz Truss's very, very minor tax decrease.
So, I mean, this is why Liz Truss has been saying, yes, that the Bank of England snaked her to get her out of power. Because they are not happy with the idea of a very, very minor tax cut.
Well, so opinions differ amongst economists as to which is true. Economists who know what they're talking about, people like me, say that it was 100% the Bank of England.
It looks that way.
And the entire establishment, the entire media, entire government class, Whitehall, they all say, no, it was Liz Truss's very tiny tax cut that did it.
Yeah, to be fair to Liz Truss, this is something that these obscure, unelected powers, banks, central banks, or the so-called rating agencies do. They wreak havoc with democracies and the will of the people. They did exactly the same thing, almost exactly the same thing, with the government of Silvio Berlusconi, which for a long time, until this current government, was the last democratically elected prime minister, yes, of Italy.
Yeah, they just scrapped democracy after that, didn't they?
Exactly, because this, I don't know if it was a Standard & Poor or whoever it was, these rating agencies, they wake up and they say, okay, your credit or credibility index, whatever it's called, is no longer AAA+. We just remove the plus or one of the A's, and suddenly the interest you pay on your government debt skyrockets. And the government, everybody panics,
well,
the government.
That's why I mentioned Liz Truss, because the evidence given for why she was so incompetent after, you know, with that setup, is that long-term government borrowing costs went to 4.8%, right?
Yeah, but it was artificial.
4.8%. So bear in mind, 4.8% is considered to be such a large number that your name can become a byword for financial incompetence if you go beyond 4.8%.
I mean, it sounds bad.
Should we have a look at where the UK is?
Under Rachel Reeves.
So this is a chart of the last 6 months of where rates are. Let's put it, here we go. Last 6 months of where rates are, 5.7.
Right.
In fact, it has not been below 5 for this entire year.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So when was it last at 4.8%, just out of interest? I mean, if we...
You might need... Here we go.
So, right.
You put it on the 5 years, and you might be able to see the Liz Truss blip. Yeah, there you go.
The Liz Truss blip.
There you go. Okay. Which, today, that would be considered a considerable reduction in rates.
Well, yes. I mean, that is... Yeah. And that's been that way for at least 6 months.
Oh, the entire year we've not been below 5%.
Yeah, I can see.
Yep.
Interesting. So when does Rachel Reeves get kicked out? When does Keir Starmer get kicked out?
The other thing that I should mention is, okay, yes, the IMF bailout is unlikely because they haven't got enough money. But the big, what could really...
Sorry, just to cross. Yeah, the IMF would love to give you a bailout. We just haven't got it, you know?
Yes.
Sorry.
Slightly unfortunate.
God.
The Laffer curve.
Yes.
So the idea is that the Laffer curve, it starts and ends at zero. If the tax rate is zero, you collect zero in tax. If the tax rate is 100%, you also collect zero in tax, because what's the point of working if everything immediately gets taken away from you? And so there's a curve in the middle, and you're basically, the concern is, and I would make this case, that we're already beyond the top of the Laffer curve. Mm. So any tax rises from here are going to result in less tax being collected rather than more.
Well, they've already found that from the last year's budget, haven't they?
Well, they have, but the black hole that the government has got is getting larger. I mean, to put this in perspective, take June, for example.
I can't believe they couldn't fill in a black hole.
Yes. In June, the government borrowed, what was it, 20.7 billion, I think. Yeah, 20.7 billion they borrowed in June. The worrying thing is Do you know how much of that was just paying the interest on the debt?
Oh, it's something like a third or something, isn't it?
$16 billion.
Whoa, really? Yes. Jesus. So three quarters of it is serviced in debt. Jesus Christ.
Yes, it's not good. You can see why we're heading...
Black hole is it getting filled in. I don't know what's going on. It's getting bigger.
Now, you asked how I would fix it. I would fix it by massively cutting spending.
Yes.
But cutting spending is ideological kryptonite to Labour. So there is zero chance they're going to do that.
Yeah. Well, so Abdul's granny needs those benefits.
Well, yes, but the big crisis will come when she's going to have a budget fairly soon.
Yeah.
And in that budget, she's almost certainly not going to substantially cut spending across the board. She's almost certainly going to raise taxes.
Yes.
Now, when she raises taxes by a huge amount and tax revenue collection actually goes down, that's what really triggers the crisis.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it's like, okay, the Labour government have got no idea and everything they're doing is making everything worse rather than better.
And everything's punitive at that point.
Yeah, so I'm...
Going after, like, things that... I mean, it's just everything, but, like, you know, the tax on unrealised gains and stuff like that. So that's money that doesn't exist. We're just going to tax you for money that doesn't exist just because screw you.
Yes, unrealised capital gains or something.
It's unbelievable.
Yes.
The concept itself.
Some sort of nonsense like this. So the markets are well aware that the next budget is crucial.
Yes, and coming.
Keir Starmer is well aware that the next budget is crucial. If she doesn't land it, Labour are possibly finished because we will get... Because if we end up going to the IMF, there'll be a vote of no confidence. Or they'll be forced out of government some other way.
Yeah.
So the next budget is absolutely crucial. So what Keir Starmer has done is he has found... He's looked through his Rolodex and he's found the most economically competent people he can. And he's had a mini reshuffle.
Right.
And he's put them around Rachel Reeves... To keep an eye on her while she's preparing this budget. And if we get into the situation that I talked about where they put up taxes and then tax revenue actually goes down, the result of that will be, well, at that point they even need to massively cut spending, which they should be doing now, or more likely they just print the money.
Yeah.
And if they print money, the value of the pound will fall. So you can already tell what the market thinks about this reshuffle by the direction of the currency, because markets are obviously not going to wait around for the printing to begin. They're going to start selling off now. So if this reshuffle goes ahead, which it has done this morning, and the pound rises, it's worked. And if the pound falls, it's failed. So let's check out how that went, shall we? Pound falls sharply in wake of Starmer's reset. Oh dear.
At least Angela Rayner looks cool.
It is that, yes.
Not her problem, is it?
Well,
three homes, Ange.
I would say it's very much her opportunity, actually.
I think she
could be Prime Minister in 6 months.
I'm sure she'll fix all of the problems.
Yes.
Because the thing is, these people have just got nowhere to go, right? Like they know they're not going to do cuts, so there's nothing they're going to do. They can't somehow magically increase growth.
Like sharp fall in the pound. There's some great bits in there. Government net approval rate hits lowest level.
No kidding.
Yeah, because people...
Oh, sorry. Go up. 11%. Who are these mythical 11%?
Yeah. They probably work for the Labour Party or the NHS. Civil Service.
Yeah.
There was a... My relationship with Reeve is stronger. Yeah, she hasn't got long left, has she? Starmer to chair meeting on immigration. Like,
oh
my God, has it got to the point we actually have to do something about it? More pain for Labour in the polls. Sacking Reeves would be kind of in this humiliation.
David Lammy doesn't have a clue what's going on.
There was a fantastic... this keeps getting added to, but there was...
Yeah.
Oh, I loved this bit, yes. So, Labour peer, things haven't been fantastic.
British understatement.
Typical British.
Yeah.
What was that? Baroness Count Harkonnen or something insisted on Tuesday... where's the quote? Yes, I'm not going to sugar pill... I'm not going to sugar the pill and say everything has been fantastic, far from it. Yes, that's about right. And somewhere in here we've got a chart of the pound. There we go. One of the biggest one-day falls in many a year. So slightly unfortunate. I will end on a quote, however, from Keir Starmer. And the quote is, "The government has lost control of the British economy, and for what? they've crashed the pound for what? Higher interest rates, higher inflation, higher borrowing, and for what? Not for you. That was a quote by Keir Starmer. Now, we said it 3 years ago.
During the reign of Truss, yes.
But nevertheless, entirely pertinent.
Well, on that note, let's move on to more of Keir Starmer. So we'll get some of the comments at the end, sorry. In the interest of time, we'll move on.
Right, I've chosen a bunch of tweets or X posts, and of course it's quite fitting, as you mentioned, Graham Linehan has been reportedly arrested by a bunch of armed police officers. That's a smart use of resources, isn't it?
I mean, thank goodness they're armed. Can you imagine what Graham Linehan could have done to those five men if they weren't heavily armed?
Absolutely. So the topic is, of course, two-tier policing, two-tier Keir, and two-tier justice. So a tale of two flags. You see, that was on the right. We have the peak of pro-Gaza, pro-Hamas, depending how you want to see it. Yep. Protest, violating, vandalizing monuments in Whitehall. No consequences, obviously. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Epping Forest, which has been the hotbed of flag protests, this lady has, as you can see, it's a government council district building, has tried to affix somehow the it's the Union Jack, so it's the right kind of flag, because we were discussing, sometimes our overlords hide themselves behind the Union Jack, because the Union Jack can be actually repurposed with an imperial sense, because it's the flag of the country that issues the passports and grants the nationalities, the citizenship. So when they want to take a middle position, they say, no, I'm totally fine with the Union Jack. It's not because it's not the St. George's ethnically, charged flag. But still, she has been arrested, unlike the case.
It goes to show the incompetence of the police. Because can you imagine how many tyrants throughout history would be absolutely delighted to find that their protesters are hanging the national flag?
I know.
And yet, I mean, the police, they're the ones normally hanging the national flag themselves, aren't they?
Yes, but the police are just so retarded. They're like, yeah, get her. Yep, make an example of her.
She's flying the flag for racist reasons.
I mean, I want to be a bit fair to the poor police, but at this point, anyone who joins these forces for that salary, I'd rather have my kids work at McDonald's or something than being the lackeys and the stooges of this sort of system. Maybe 10 years ago, if you joined, you still didn't know. But today, just being having to manhandle and arrest your fellow ethnic brethren for flying the national flag. I mean,
it's ridiculous.
I agree with Dan. Police forces all over the world would be scratching their heads. I mean, this is what you have to deal with. So that was
ridiculous.
That.
Maybe it's so stupid. What happened? I flew the British flag. Oh, where?
This is our friend Britain. Leo Kerr calls it a tale of two. Well, I call it a tale of two roundabouts. So you see, one roundabout,
the
painted in the colors of St. George's.
I've been seeing that crop up all over the place. I've been driving around a lot for the last 2 weeks, and they're all over the place.
It's a genuinely viral resistance.
Thank God for that. Whereas this one is obviously government-sponsored, taxpayer-funded, and vandalizing this, in contrast to the other one, was to be investigated. Thank
vandalizing you. The true religion of the state.
Exactly, of course. So then you see where the government allegiance is and what the real agenda is. So this is another cartoon. This is a sizable account on Twitter. She says she's born and raised in Spain. So it's interesting that it's also catching the attention of people all around the world. So again, the Bobbies are removing St. George's flags while the lady has been pickpocketed by...
This is totally true. Something like 95% of robberies and like petty crimes go uninvestigated.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable. So, but, they got the flags, so that was important.
I don't know if it was Leicester or somewhere else a few years ago, there was a scandal where it turned out that the police would show up at house burglaries only if the number was either even or odd. That was their way of cutting down the backlog. It was all
CNN
everywhere. Yeah, so they had this internal protocol. Okay, who was called? What's the house number? Odd or even, and they would show only at 50% of the cases. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
So if you
it's literally a lottery.
If you ring the police and they don't show up to your burglary, just ring them back and give them a different
house. I'm at 17, not 16.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just look out for you when you get here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually a story.
Yeah, it was. You are right. In 2015, Leicestershire Police.
Oh, Leicestershire again.
Yeah, yeah. The new method has been called, quote, ethically dubious.
And this was way
before. But it was highly effective. But it saved them loads of time.
It literally cut the house burglaries in half.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe that was way before the whole flag removing operations and choreographed dance for LGBT parades, you know, drawing rainbows on the road.
This is so ridiculous. Leicestershire Police conducted a 3-month trial in which crime investigators were told only to attend attempted burglaries when the victim lived in an even-numbered house. Why are you telegraphing it to burglars? Just go for the odd numbers.
So much for justice for all, right?
Oh, it's ridiculous. God damn it, man. That's really stupid. Sorry, Karen.
No, it's okay. We can move on. But I just think this is good that it's also an international story. Now, here we have another compare and contrast. On the left, we have presumably homeless person paid into the system. On the right, we have arrived illegally by boat, Somali flag, stays in a 4-star hotel.
I'm going to fact check you on this one because I saw a bunch of lib fact checkers going, excuse me. They're not all in 4-star hotels.
Yeah.
Some of them are in 3-star hotels. Mm. And I was like, well, there we go. You got us there.
And it's not always a 3-meal course or 3-course meal.
It's got
and
dessert with it, you know.
Again, this makes a good point, but I also want to warn against a pitfall because even if they do, and we discussed this a bit, even if they do pay into the system, I think we have a right to decide if that's what we really want, because you cannot just define a nation as an economic zone where everybody's paying taxes and raising the GDP, right? Because there is more to it. There's an identity, there's kinmanship, there's trust, there's shared values and all that. So at the best of times, because they are always like, yeah, they need to come in to pay the pension. And
as if this is a company that we're running.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. I don't care if you pay your tax. I mean, often they don't, but that's another
obviously
story.
Obviously you should, but that's why you're here, right?
But even if you do, we are, I think, any nation is well within their rights to decide what sort of people we want, and we just don't want to be an economic zone. We want to be a nation, a 100%. Family. Okay. Now, what else do we have?
Get to the next one.
Now, this has been something, first Ian Miles Chong, again, he's based in Malaysia. I don't know if he's a British national or not, but it's interesting that these people all over the world are raising these issues. He has broken this news, or maybe someone else, 7-year contracts between the British government and the hotels, and Elon Musk,
Just a quick thing on this. Yes, the government has been paying hotel owners huge amounts of money to house something like 50,000 illegals. There are about 180,000 who have broken in over the last 5 years, but at the moment, I think it's something like 50,000 they're actually putting up in hotels. It has made one migrant hotel owner called Graham King a billionaire. 35% increase in his hotel empire from government spending. And there was a chap the other day who was like, yeah, they offered me $3 million for 7 years, and I said no, because it'd ruin the place. And so, absolute patriot. So, yes.
Yeah,
completely correct.
Kudos to him. But yeah, just like the diversity and victimhood business we were discussing, the so-called solidarity business is also big money. Yep. And it's great that Elon Musk has, I mean, he's heavy on the government's case. So many tweets about the grooming gangs, obviously, and this one as well. And he's making a very valid point, I believe. If this is a 7-year contract, it means the government is even actually saddling and burdening the next government, which is there's no way in hell they're going to re-win the elections.
They don't think they
are. They're saddling their successors with this burden, and this shows they are not actually truthful when they say they want to fix this problem, because this looks like very much long-term.
100%.
Okay, this was actually Elon Musk's post. The original post is unavailable now for some reason. Yesterday, it was actually his pinned post talking about the rape of Britain. And it was the story of a girl in Oldham who goes to the police to report rape. She was allegedly a minor and allegedly drunk, or at least that's what the police tell her. Go back. Can you imagine? Go back and come back when you are sober and with an adult. And as she leaves the police station again, she's accosted and raped, and again on her way to home she's raped multiple times. And of course
this happened, I think, 2013, something like that. It's a few years old, but it's one of those I think it was in Oldham or something.
Yeah.
It's one of those stories where it's just...
Dear God.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Being raped three times in one
chat is
day.
Saying she was 12 years old.
Yeah.
I think it's great that somebody with the clout and caliber of Elon Musk is
superb,
putting, putting pressure
and
also...
He's been doing actually...
Yeah, this is the original post. And then we have, this week we heard the Archbishop of, I think it's York.
It is, yeah. There isn't an Archbishop of Canterbury at the moment. And at the rate this guy's going, he's not going to get replaced either. Like, we'll end up with zero archbishops. Because, yeah, like you say, like the deportation plans are un-British, un-Christian and beneath us. Bro, do you know how much pressure we had to put on Farage to get him to agree to mass deportations?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yes.
Yeah, now he's throwing a spanner in the works. And I just don't, it's again, a suicide, it's a talk about Western collective suicide. And, you know, you can only compare this to white women who vote for open borders and then complain about insecurity on the streets of London. And this thing, you are promoting or advocating for importing hordes of infidels who want you dead and who want your religion to be wiped out.
It's unchristian not to bring in millions of Muslims. What?
Yeah, I mean, it's the lowest form of the dumbest form of charity, if you like.
Can you imagine if in the 12th century, just as our lads were going off to fight the Crusades, we had archbishops basically advocating for the other side?
It'd be wild. They'd get lit.
That wouldn't last very well. No.
This is from Jonathan, of course, our friend and old colleague here at Lotus Eaters. This goes to dispel what I was telling you. Non-Western, and the source is UCL, University College London, non-Western immigrants are actually a net drain. So that myth is not even true that they contribute.
The GDP is actually a negative GDP. Yeah.
And by the way, what is GDP? Because if they buy vapes and send money home and pay commission on that or phone cases for their mobile, that's all GDP, right?
Well, the biggest component of GDP is state spending.
Yeah, exactly.
So if the state spends
a happier
more,
society or anything.
GDP goes up.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
So,
But right, so yeah, this is not worth our time, as you correctly point out, and this is in Denmark as well. So it's not like this is like a unique case either, is it?
Yeah, exactly. So we can move on to the next one. Again, fact-checking pointed out by Nick Dixon. You know, Ryland Clark has apparently been sacked from this morning.
So
and
just as a quick thing, for anyone, any of our foreign viewers watching, The Mirror is a left-wing but lowbrow paper. And so they've decided to fact-check him for saying, actually, well, I'll let you carry on.
Yeah, so he said, look, migrants come around. And of course, the message we say, you have nothing to lose, everything to gain. Worst thing that can happen to you, if at all, is that they send you back what they want. And as soon as you arrive, here's the hotel, here's the phones, iPad, NHS, English course, discount for the gym, this £1 to get into the London Transport Museum as opposed to £20 for the usual citizens. And the good people at the Mirror have fact-checked Ryland and have come up with, well, you know, the iPhones and iPads are provided by charities, so they are not always taxpayer funded.
Well, I'm glad they're George Soros funded. I mean, good for them, but the rest of it is all correct. We're still funding the NHS, we're still giving them £40 a week spending money, we're still paying for their food, their accommodation, the NHS, any other, like, you know, dental work or whatever, we're paying for all of it. Not the iPhone.
I used to be an interpreter for some of these legal studios who interview and prep the asylum seekers.
Right.
So you had the asylum seeker who is being interviewed by the Home Office for his asylum application. And these, of course, with legal aid paid by the taxpayer.
Yeah, obviously.
So these legal studios are coaching him how to go through with this procedure. And at the same time, you have another legal studio representing him against the government, suing the government because upon arrival, he has been housed in some military barracks as opposed to the hotel. And these military barracks were actually facilities where British servicemen were housed in. So they were not like terrible places. But these people simultaneously were suing the government. You had two parallel cases and they were assured that, look, regardless of the outcome of you suing the government over the military barracks, it will have no bearing on your asylum application outcome. You know, so this is, and of course, two cases, both financed by legal aid. So this is the situation. But then the good people have mirrors.
Well, that all adds to GDP.
Yeah, exactly. It's all GDP.
When the backlash comes, it's going to be so justified, I'm just saying.
And I think this is the last thing I chose. It's in Persian. This is an Iranian account, but they are actually mocking us.
Why wouldn't you mock us?
These are Iranians who are, of course, being anti-government, are very much anti-Islam and anti-Islamic Republic. So they say, what the hell is going on with Britain? They are hiring someone close to 50K per year to be a Muslim chaplain because the prison population is predominantly Muslims. And again, this is GDP as well, isn't
it? Yeah, it's raw GDP right in front of your eyes.
And so they were joking underneath this in the comments that, you know, if I were not so much anti-Islam, I would apply because
why not?
It's 50K almost.
Yeah, 50 grand's 50 grand, man. You know, can't look that gift horse in the mouth. Ah, oh, bloody hell.
I wonder how many bishops Saudi Arabia employ for the Christian prison population they have.
And you know what? I don't even blame them for employing none. I agree with it. It's just that we're stupid enough not to. Anyway. Rob says, to my knowledge, out of all the debate podcasts I've seen, not a single person has asked a white leftist, "Why do you hate being white? Do you hate the white face looking back in the mirror?" Perhaps you should ask them. Honestly, the thing is, you can find them talking about that sort of stuff. And they will say, yeah, I'm embarrassed by it. Eminem came out and said he was embarrassed to be white, didn't he? Do you want to get the video comments up, Samson? Eminem said that he was embarrassed to be white a few years ago. It's like, no, shut up. You're embarrassing me because you're white now. Yes. Shut up, you know? Archbigot of Durham says, you don't need archbishops. What you need is archbigots. DM me. Canterbury is opener here. Matt says, will the UK get an influx of seniors from Spain if UK pensions are cancelled or reduced? Well, that great question, right? If the UK pension somehow doesn't pay out, what are the pensioners retiring in Spain or Magaluf or wherever going to do?
Some of them are going to be in trouble.
They're going to have to come back, right? Or become destitute in those countries. Thank you, Reverend Norse. And Joshua says, Dan, would my banking proposal be helpful here? Possibly. The byproduct of socialism is systemic oppression, which is obviously true. Came to rural Cornwall from... Oh, no, I read that one already. Okay. Right, let's go to the video comments. Yeah, that's basically been how they've been reacting. They have been very sure to inform us that St. George was Turkish, which is not true. But
no, but they love it, don't they?
They've got their narrative and they're sticking with it, no matter how.
So he was a Roman soldier and time traveler.
He was. Wow. No, that's absolutely true. And they're very clear that he never came to England. It's like, yes, because England didn't exist in the second century. So yes, that's true also. But anyway, thank you, lefty shitlibs. Appreciate that. Let's go to the next one.
Keir Starmer's a wanker. Beep if you agree. A lot of people agree.
Eleven % approval rating, folks.
None of them going through that road.
Yeah. Just, I mean, if I was, honestly, if I was in the government and my approval rating was 11%, I'd just shoot myself. I'd just do the honourable thing and go down into the Starmer bunker and just...
It is whiskey in the revolver time, really. Do the honourable thing, yes.
Yeah, exactly. What are you still doing here, Keir?
I mean, he has no shame. Twice he has been asked in front of or next to Donald Trump and J.D. Vance about the free speech issue, and he has looked straight in his eyes or into the camera in front of all the press.
Yeah. Said Graham Line and deserved.
No. That would have been truthful. We have free speech in Britain and we are quite proud of it. Yeah. He said that in the US, in the White House, and in Scotland this time around. I'm curious this month later as Trump comes over to London. What's going to be the story?
But no, you're right. That would be truthful. That would actually be an upgrade on the lie.
That's Starmer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, he just flat out lies to his face, and everyone's like, "We know you're lying." Like, I'm sure Starmer knows he's lying. Vance and Trump knows he's lying.
Sure.
So let's go to the next one.
Hello. I haven't sent in a video for ages, so here's some pottery happening. This will become a mug. I'll put a handle on it. I'll pull some handles later, but I probably won't do a video because it looks obscene. What colour should it be? Should I decorate it? Let me know. Let me know what I should do, and I might send in another video. Bye.
Well, I always really like dark green. I think it's a very nice colour, dark green. You know, especially if you can get a fade on it. You know, it looks gorgeous. So that's what I would go for. But do send in your suggestions. Let's go to the next one.
So recently, there was a protest rally here in Australia about ending mass migration and also celebrating Australia. The lefty government did not support the rally, labelling it a far-right march, which, considering their vocal support for the Gaza march, is unsurprising. Unfortunately, towards the end, some neo-Nazis hijacked the rally, and mainstream media portrayed them as the main organisers, despite the presence of many diverse attendees who were not white.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, you're always going to have a radical fringe of retards who are here to ruin it for everyone.
Well, either that or they're feds.
I think they actually, they know, everyone, the guy who runs it is known, so it's probably not that he's a fed. It's probably more that he's a retard. But, you know, what are you going to do? You know, someone's got to come out and ruin it for everyone. Anyway, Zesty King says, I travelled to Leicester a few months ago. After wandering into a residential area and being stared at for being white, I found a great mural on the side of the pub in the city centre. It was of a crusading knight with three St. George's crosses in no man's land next to a British Tommy, Spitfires in a field of poppies. I couldn't help but feel that this is an admission by the presumably English owner of the pub that they were surrounded, and they knew it. Instead of fleeing, they were willing to stand. That is actually,
that's commendable.
Yeah, that is very commendable, because it's entirely possible that gets vandalised. You know, but Russian says, lived in Leicester for 4 years. There is literally a road in North Leicester that divides the Muslim side from the Hindu and Sikh side. They do not integrate, they do not mix, they hate each other. Multiculturalism is a pointless exercise in futility. Well, I mean, that's only according to the University of Leicester's own report on Leicester. I mean, what do I know? I've not been to Leicester. Kevin says, can't be surprised that a university that is 53% non-white thinks the countryside is too white. Yeah, that was another thing as well. In the report, there was a particular quote by a white man with a disability, and he says something like, well, yeah, when I go to the police, they just don't believe me, but if they look like you, pointing to the interviewer, then they take it more seriously. So that tells you that the interviewers are
exactly
diverse. So that's totally true. First Keeper Orland says, a little town of Glossop is roughly 98% normal, but still has more than a fair share of Turkish barbers and vape shops, roughly five. Recently a reform council, so there's some scrap of hope. Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? Like, you know, you go to the most remote sort of parochial villages in England, and somehow there's a bloody Turkish barber. It's like, where do they get the intelligence that these villages exist? Like, there's one in, like, you know, Fishguard in Wales, or, you know, tiny, like, there's no way that some Turk in Turkey, some Kurdish guy in Turkey, is just like, okay, I'm going there, guys. It's like, how did you know that existed? Anyway, they must
scout the territory quite well.
They must, yeah.
Here, they spread the network.
Jimbo says, went into the oldest pub in Lancashire on Saturday. Still had straw on the roof and proudly had the Union Jack flying outside. Everyone seemed to know each other and treat each other as such. There are many sleeping shires who haven't been diversified yet, and it was lovely to see. Well, I mean, there needs to be a massive uptick in racism, given the advocacy that we have for diversity. Because apparently diversity just brings with it racism, so does the University of Leicester, using Leicester as an example. I mean, it's just not a great advertisement, but what do I know? Colin says, experienced racism in the home. Interestingly vague phrasing. I wonder how much of that is other family members saying racist things about other people rather than the respondent. Well, yeah, who knows, right? Who knows? But it is interesting how even in their own homes they're being racist with one another.
Or maybe mom and dad are from different tribes.
Yeah, it could well be, actually. Yeah, it could well be. I don't know. Derek says, if you want lessons on how to practice sovereign austerity, look to Greece. Is Greece a good example of this?
No, not really. I mean, they...
I didn't think so.
Forced on the massive pension cuts, civil service cuts.
Bank runs.
One of the IMF conditions that they put on Greece.
Oh, right, okay.
So slash the pensions, slash the private sector wages, sell the airports.
How can they slash private sector wages?
By just saying, okay, from now on you're getting paid less.
Oh, right, okay. They can actually just do that.
Yeah. But so, I mean, all of the spending cuts were good, but they also put up taxes.
Right.
So the debt to GDP in Greece, I think, stayed at 180%, and it just basically stayed there.
Oh.
So yes, they did cut the spending, but they also made it impossible to grow out of it, because Nobody could get a job there anymore. so it doesn't actually solve the problem. So the last thing you want to do is go to the IMF. They just make things... Well,
why would they want to fix private sector wages? Don't you want higher wages so people can pay more tax?
No, because all they want to do is shrink the deficit as fast as possible in the least creative way possible. So what you should do is cut all of the spending, but also cut taxes, yeah, so that you then grow out the other side. Yeah. But what they do is they cut the spending, which is good, but also increase
the
taxes.
Ramp up the taxes to keep you trapped.
Which just keeps in status. Yeah.
Right, okay. James says, so since Reeves is sending our economy down the toilet, what do normal people do, Dan?
Find God, store tin food, baseball bats, keep large amounts of money out of the bank.
Yeah. Have you ever watched 28 Days Later?
Yes.
Basically that.
Don't have too much money in the bank because, I mean, in Cyprus, they just came along and just took it.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Mental.
So what, the mattress, or you mean gold, Bitcoin, that kind
something,
of
thing? Anything. Physical gold or Bitcoin would be probably my go-tos on that, yeah.
Zesty King says, won't the IMF have conditions for a bailout? What will those be, Dan?
Well, the things I just mentioned.
Yeah.
You'll be cut spending across the board and increased taxes.
Jimbo says, it's almost like theatre. Any bailout from the IMF will just continue to go towards the agenda. Nothing extracts wealth like bad ideas posing as solutions. Yep. Entitlements are a literal pyramid scheme that relies on infinite people being added to the system. And then you funnily understand immigration, don't you? Omar says, taxing non-existent wealth. Label unironically turn the Laffer curve into a sine wave. Zesty King, to quote Benjamin Disraeli, there is no economy where there is no efficiency. And he said that in 1868.
Yep.
Kevin says, leftists, the migrants pay taxes. Yep, Abdul came over on a dinghy, got ILR, and has a job at a garage working for minimum wage. However, then he then brought his three wives and eight children who don't work and are all claiming benefits. Even a backwards place like Thailand has rules in place that say you can live there and on a work visa, but if you want to bring your family over, you have to pay for everything they need or they don't come in. Now, why can't we do that? Also, if you enter on a work student medical visa and stop working, studying, or finish your treatment, you get out. Yeah, I mean, this is the problem with all of everything that's happening, is that it is the choice of the British state. There is none of this is being forced upon us. Like, we have chosen absolutely every single stupid thing that we've decided to do.
It's almost as if it's great replacement by design. But you say that, and some of our own friends,
yeah, freak out.
In the sensible right or conservatives call us the woke right.
Yeah, and it's like, sorry, they're doing it intentionally. I mean, they literally say we need immigration to prop up this, to prop up that, to prop up the other. So, okay, but...
And they know they outbreed us.
Yeah.
Statistics are clear. The population of the southern side of Mediterranean has grown threefold, fourfold in the past few decades. So it's obvious.
Yeah.
So how come the government... we have governments... And this government, who predict the temperatures in the not-so-distant future. How come they cannot
predict the population graph?
So it's obvious it's intentional.
You saw Matt Goodwin's population graph the other day, a couple of months ago, right? Where it's like, yeah, it's by, what was it, 2060 or something, that the English will become a minority in England. And it's like, so it's perfectly conceivable because, I mean, and that's assuming they don't just Boris Johnson us some more and keep cranking open the floodgates. But it's inevitable that this is going to happen. And, I mean, you know, I'm sure that the GDP will pay for itself eventually. Anonymy says, Labour wants to allow the illegals to work straight away so they pay taxes, and in 3 years they'll argue they should be able to vote. Well, Wales already does that. Wales already allows illegals to vote in their elections. But it is a matter of time that this happens in Britain. And the thing is, it's all back to front, obviously, because obviously someone born overseas should never have political power, they should never be able to claim benefits, they should not be enfranchised in any way, shape or form. They should be treated essentially like the Athenians treated the metics. So the metics were a class of immigrant workers, like artisans, small businessmen, who were allowed to live and work in Athens, pay taxes and profit from living in Athens because they were part of, like, you know, a trade network. But they had no political enfranchisement whatsoever. And why would they?
Mm.
Like, what would be the reason for it, right? And yet here we are at the point where we've got, I mean, we've had foreign-born, well, like, non-ethnically native prime ministers now. Kemi Badenoch, literally an African in charge of the Conservative.
She's a first-generation immigrant.
Yeah. So it's literally...
The next Tory leader will presumably be somebody who hasn't even come to the country yet, but is vaguely open to relocating if they want.
Yeah. That's precisely what I think is going to happen, actually. If the hotels are full of illegals, Lancelot asks, how do you still have a tourism industry? That's a great question. I'm not sure we could say we have much of a tourism industry these days. I mean, the thing is, a lot of the places people used to go for tourism, you don't really want to go now.
But the government of Australia on its official website is advising caution or extreme caution for Australians who visit London.
Same with the Chinese. The Chinese are like, yeah, if you go to London, and they're quite racist about the demographics they pick out.
They're more honest.
Yeah, they're more
good
honest.
Old Chinese.
lack of political correctness in that regard. If the police and councils lead into it, it would be dismantled and stopped. Like when the boomer or millennial leans into a meme. Yeah, no, this is completely true. They can absolutely solve all these problems, and they know they can. It's just political reasons, moral reasons, keep us chained to this. Yeah, liberalism is 100% that. And there are lots of people saying happy birthday, so thank you very much. 46, so I'm feeling quite old. Looking forward to going out for dinner tonight. That'll be fun. And First Keeper Orland says, if possible, could Dan maybe do a Brokenomics on highway spending? Seems to have gone up astronomically since 2020.
Is it UK or US highways? Or
I don't know. You'll have to look into it.
First Keeper Orland, why didn't you reply to your own comment and put some more details on that one?
But right, so Nicholas, where can people find more from you?
Thanks for asking. My YouTube channel is called Nicholas De Santo Anglo-Italian Comedy. I'm approaching 100,000 subscribers.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Well, that's good.
Yeah. I'm at 94, so this show might actually give me the final push. So on those videos in the description, people can learn about my upcoming show this Saturday in Tampa, Florida.
Wow.
I've called it Alligator Alcatraz Tour. I'll be in Florida, in Tampa, in Orlando. And later this month in London, on the 17th, we are celebrating Trump's official visit. It's going to be me, Count Dankula, Louis Schaefer, and Alistair Williams.
Awesome.
In London, secret location, immune to cancel culture. So check the links up in the description of my videos.
I love Alistair Williams. Years ago, I had the mistake of having him at a live show that I was at. Like he was going on first, and then I was doing a talk afterwards. And the problem is, and I say it's a mistake because he is like him and Leo are basically the funniest men on earth, and they've got this, I don't know, it's a really strange way of like controlling the crowd with it, but basically everyone's howling, and then I'm like, okay, I'm not a comedian and I'm here to talk to you about politics.
I'm going to give you a
lecture, a
philosophical lecture.
Yeah. and basically, like, you know, he demolished me by just being so much more talented than I am, and I was just like, god,
in that department, but he's good.
Yeah, he's so good. Do go and see those. They are going to be absolutely excellent. But right, thanks for joining us, folks. If you want to support us more, go sign up to the website, £5 a month. Get your copy of Islander while you can. Help us keep the lights on, and we will see you tomorrow.